Imagine putting like a piece of black tape over a flashing check engine light and just assuming your car is totally fixed.
Right, which is a terrible idea.
Exactly. But that is pretty much exactly what traditional school discipline does to a traumatized child. So welcome to today's deep dive. Today we're digging into the guidelines for Tippy Kids.
Yeah, that's the manual with the distinct Greenbird logo. It's all about trauma-informed practice for teachers, youth workers, parents, everyone, really.
Right. And the mission for you listening today and for us is to really understand how shifting our perspective on childhood behavior can, I mean, literally, alter a child's brain development.
It's massive, because usually when a kid is hypervigilant or having this massive emotional outburst, our instinct is to just see them as, you know, acting out, being difficult.
Well, for sure. We think they're just pushing buttons.
Exactly. But this manual shifts the focus completely. It establishes this core premise that trauma puts children into a physiological survival mode. It's sort of like a smoke detector that's been calibrated way too sensitively.
So wait, a traumatized child's brain sounds the emergency alarm for burnt toast exactly the same way it would for an actual house fire.
You hit the nail on the head. Those difficult behaviors aren't defiance. They are literal stress responses.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because their nervous system is totally hijacking their reactions. If traditional punishment like yelling or timeouts is just taping over that check engine light, how do we actually look under the hood?
Well, what's fascinating here is the framework they use, called the four R's. First, you realize just how widespread trauma is.
Okay, realize.
Yeah. Then you recognize the specific symptoms in the child. Third, you respond with supportive practices. And the fourth one is crucial. You proactively resist re-traumatization.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though, because I have to push back on that last point. I get the theory, but let's be real for a second. A teacher is managing, what, 30 kids at once?
Oh, easily.
Right. So if a student is totally melting down, refusing to work, maybe throwing a chair, how on earth is a teacher supposed to resist re-traumatization or, like, offer a choice without completely losing control of the room?
Well, it's not about letting a child hurl furniture with zero consequence. Obviously, physical safety comes first. But it's about looking at the root cause. Trauma strips away a child's sense of power.
And standard discipline demands immediate blind compliance.
Exactly. Which just triggers that feeling of being trapped all over again. So for everyday disruptions, instead of cornering a kid, you offer choices to restore that stolen autonomy.
Like what, for example?
So instead of demanding a restless kid sit down, which makes them feel cornered, a teacher might say, hey, you can do this worksheet at your desk or standing at the back counter.
Oh, wow.
Right. It instantly diffuses the threat level in their brain because suddenly they have some control back.
Giving them their power back makes perfect sense for a single moment. But, I mean, a child's nervous system isn't going to permanently reset if they go home to an environment that immediately strips that autonomy away again.
That is the big challenge.
Right. So what happens when the primary layer of support, like the family, is totally overwhelmed or just absent? Can schools actually fill that void?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the manual breaks this down into concentric circles of care. It's an entire ecosystem. If parents struggle to provide baseline stability, the broader environment has to step in. And the source actually explicitly highlights activity leaders and coaches here.
Really? Coaches?
Oh,
I guess because they operate outside that academic pressure cooker.
Precisely. A coach might literally be the only trusted figure modeling healthy boundaries and emotional regulation for that kid.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And if schools and extracurriculars aren't enough, then you rely on the outer safety net. Social workers, pediatricians, therapists.
Because it takes a village.
It does. Because if this entire network fails, we aren't just talking about a kid getting bad grades. Chronic stress physically changes the brain.
Wait, how so? What's the actual mechanism there?
Well, when a child is constantly flooded with cortisol from being stuck in that fight-or-flight survival mode, it actually restricts the hippocampus.
And that's a memory center, right?
Exactly. It's responsible for forming new memories and learning. So failing to support them leads to impaired memory, severe emotional exhaustion, and statistically, a significantly higher risk of ending up in the criminal justice system.
So what does this all mean? It means TBAT isn't just some clinical tool reserved for a therapist's couch. It's a collaborative lens. It requires empathy and routine from literally every adult in the community to help a kid flourish.
Yeah, it's about building a consistent network that finally proves to the child's brain that they are safe.
Which leaves a final provocative thought for you to ponder today. If trauma fundamentally alters how a child's brain processes fear and control, How might our standard, rigid school disciplinary systems be secretly setting up our most vulnerable kids to fail?